Herzrauschen, die Radiosendung von Mur.at.
Hello and welcome to Netzrauschen, the broadcast from Mur.at, where we cover topics related to digital society, media art and net politics. We broadcast Tuesdays every 4 weeks from 10 to 10:30 here on Radio Helsinki. All informations regarding the broadcasts and further links to our guests you can find as usual on helsinki.at. Past episodes become part of the podcast archive that you can download at netzrauschen.mur.at. In this edition with me, Andreas Zingele, I interview Martin Nadal, who was participating in this year's work lab with his project FangoCam that he developed during the Mur.at virtual residency. The interview was recorded during this year's Ars Electronica festival. Enjoy the interview.
I think that all my work is in some ways like very technical. So, you know, it's like I'm very interested in that things that really work. It's like, I don't know, for us, you know, it's like, you know, I like, because what I'm trying to say is not to see like something purely speculative, you know, to open the door, you know, that say like, yeah, maybe we could build, or maybe there's like someone that is interested in building these sort of tools, or they can continue. But I'm more, you know, for example, in Fango, that was like my previous project, and the project that is being shown here in Ars Electronica. Well, first of all, it was kind of a nightmare because it was in 2020. I was like in an MRE residency that was going to happen in Greece. You know, it's like COVID happened. I was in Berlin. I didn't have like a working space. You know, it really was like a tough project. And what happened also is that I was like, at that time, I think I was like in another stage, and I was like a lot in hacker thing and trying to maintain it and to keep it, you know, that it worked perfectly. And that's like a lot of work, no? And I think that with experience, you know, I've managed to learn that, you know, I'm like really an artist, and what like the main purpose of both projects is not really that they're like super usable. It's more about like, I don't know, giving ideas, or, it's like the object exhibition more than it's like, since like both projects are like open source, you know, it's like whoever hacker wants to continue with the idea, it's like more than, it's more, you know, go ahead and
more than welcome.
To continue working like, with the project. Yeah.
Yeah. So also by making it open source, you're also kind of open for collaboration, or open for other people who are interested in it to continue with it, or to find collaboration that you're not seeking specific people, but to say, okay, who is interested can contribute and can
continue, because it happens a lot that you're like in an exhibition, and when you're like, and this work with this and this work with that, and it's like sometimes as an artist, it's like, you know, I worked, I did this, I opened it to the public, you know, so you can continue it. And that is, I think that is one of the advantages of open source, that whoever they can continue. And I usually, with art projects, how I do it, because I think, for example, I previously did other projects with about cryptocurrencies, and I wrote a lot of code about mining Bitcoin. And
The Bitcoin work.
And usually it's like all the source code, or the main source code, was released like in a year. Because it's like when you're like doing on some research, you know, it's like at the end, it's like your little baby, and you want to play, you know, and you want to spend some time playing with it, and then, you know, and open. So that's like usually how I work with the projects. It's like not in this case. In this case, it's released and it's in an open repository. But yeah.
Okay. So maybe also with the FangoCam project that you will document and release it on one of the Muate websites as part of the virtual residency. I think, do you plan to continue to work? I mean, FangoCam, like different strategies against big tech corporations. Is this kind of now a certain niche that you want to continue research on?
I think, as you know, as we were saying, like the this sort of platform capitalism surveillance. For me, what really interests me is, you know, that experience that happened in the human sphere. Big corporations are able to extract value out of it, no? So in some way, they are like milking us. They're like from things that is very human. I've realized that in my work, I always work with the concept of scale. It's like I want to talk about personal relationships. And for example, in the previous, you know, for example, in this case, that is with cameras, with photographs. For me, it's kind of very impressive that, you know, they are giving us like free storage for photographs, and later they are going to extract value out of it. No, it's like in two ways, like training their models. In this case, there's like, for example, Amazon. It has like Amazon Photo that is unlimited storage for your photographs, but also they use those images to train recognition. Recognition is a software also from Amazon that has been used by governmental offices. So for me, that loop is fascinating. And in some way, I like to think about ways of breaking those mechanisms.
Well, with these training models that photos are getting taken to train different machine learning and algorithms, there is a website that I will link in the show notes also. It's like a search engine where you can search your website, for example, and then it goes through Midjourney, DALL-E, and different other platforms and searches if your images are used for the training. Of these algorithms. And for example, with my personal website, I figured out through this search engine that they took a lot of images from my website, especially the ones where you can see faces very well. Like no one was asking me to take these photos. I did not consent to anything. They are partly Creative Commons licensed, partly copyrighted by me. They were just taken, kind of stolen in a way, no? So if you upload it to a cloud service, then, I mean, at least you know that they are taking it.
Maybe like, now that you're saying this, maybe it would be interesting that in the next iteration, it would be like some sort of JavaScript plugin. So you could have your website with the images, you know, that humans see like the whole image, but computers and bots see like the scrambled image, no?
Yeah, for example.
That would be very cool.
That would be really cool, actually.
Yeah.
That you make it like, you know, you always prepare data to make it machine readable and so on, but how to inverse it actually, that for the human it's visible, but for the machine it's kind of scrambled and they get a different image. Or also part of this platform was a plugin for WordPress and a code snippet for other websites that you can kind of stop a bot to say like, don't follow this page and index it, like what you have with bots or cookies and so on. So that there is kind of this no follow and don't scrape the images. So maybe it's also possible to just, you know, make a honeypot for the for the scrapers to get some very scrambled up and distorted images that are maybe impossible to reverse, and then feeding them little bit of bullshit or so.
Because it's like in the latest years we've been like And also from this free information movement, we have been encouraging like Wikipedia, like giving a lot of information, Wikidata, like connecting different entities, like photographs, like giving everything in Creative Commons.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that there was like all this information that we gave for free. And I think also we go back to this idea of my work that is about humans, scale, big corporations. We didn't see it coming that, you know, in years, then it was going to be like, it was going to fuel all these systems, not for artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now it's like very difficult. I still collaborate. I collaborate with Wikipedia. I mean, I edit and I try also with Music Brain, that is a platform for open access about music, tagging music. I still do it, but I don't know if it's like useful if I'm like doing a... You know, if I should do it or not, you know, it's like, but yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think we are like transitioning in a very optimistic point view that we should share all our information for free to everybody to another stand, but we are like now in another situation where maybe we have to think if we really want to share our knowledge for free. I mean, for everybody, maybe we should limit it. Maybe we could also have licenses just to use it for humans. No, that would be also like...
Yeah. Like maybe an extension of the Creative Commons licensing model. Not just that it's allowed for commercial use or non-commercial use, but maybe it should just be consumed by human. using photos, printing them or having them on a blog, but they should just be consumed by humans.
But I'm sure that then the big companies would have like a horde of humans reading and that would be, it's like very difficult to tackle the issues.
There is always a way around it.
Yeah, there's like, and usually super evil, super smart and super evil, as we were saying before. It's like something like that you didn't thought in advance. So it's like, it's really, but we have to start making those questions. It's like, how is going to be the future? What is like that sort, what sort of limitations we want to put? Like, what is like, how they can come back? I don't know, how they can be like repel that, those limitations or things are limiting like the use of your image, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, there are certain phones specifically ensuring privacy and security. And one of the features was that you actually have a physical switch to turn on your microphone or to turn it off. And I thought, okay, well, who needs this really, that deal? But also the example that you said about turning on the microphone and checking the background if there is a soccer game going on or not is actually like proves in a way that it would be very important to have such high privacy security ensuring tools as part of your like everyone's phone in a way.
Yeah.
Because the corporations are just super sneaky also that they are.
Yeah, but also it's like we are now, I think like as everything, capitalism is able to assume everything. And also now all these issues about privacy, they've managed, like the big corporation, they've managed to make on their own and to an excuse to sell more things. And for example, Apple now is focused in privacy. It's like the phone, I don't know if you know, but it has like, there's like few things that the for example, for emails, they don't, you know, it's harder to be tracked and it's like not more privacy centered than the alternative Android, no? Yeah, no, it's like, what I wanted to say is that even that always that they find ways to, even with these movements, to make in their own and to extract profit out of them. So I don't know if it's possible, you know, it's like, you know, I'm asking myself what is like the limitation, no? It's like of the,
yeah. Well, I mean, on the one hand, there were articles that said that it's really hard to make people pay for all these services. So that was an argument for profiling, extracting data, and giving the services away for free. But of course, on the other hand, also, once you have everything stored in a Google Cloud or in an Amazon Cloud, and then they start charging you It's even impossible to get your gigabytes and terabytes of photos from the last 10, 15 years down from the cloud. And then where do you put it, actually, and so on? Like,
yeah,
it's also the dependencies are just getting
more. Yeah, the dependency. And it's very clever because you are, you know, because I have done like the experience, you can download your photographs, but for example, some of the processing that you use, for example, that, you know, that they recognize where that photograph has been taken or who is in the photograph, uh-huh. all that information, you are not allowed to download it back. So it's like you upload a photograph and maybe you are like tagging your friends, and then it's kind of useful because maybe you want to have like all the photographs of your friend, no? You are able to download everything in the, I think in Amazon, I don't know, I think in Google is Google Takeout. You can download a lot of information, which I recommend to the listeners to do it because it's very frightening. Also, my favorite is Spotify because it's like all the songs that you've played and also where have you been. And if, you know, and also in Google Maps, for example, they store if you've been walking, if you've been by bike, or if you're going by subway. It's pretty, you know, it's very interesting to check that information, or like estimate. But there's like some information that meta information in those photos and those images that you are not allowed to download. So they process it. You're in some way they create, or you are like dependent in that information. And when you want that, you know, your data back, they are not giving, you know, and this is like one example that they are not going to give it for free. You are not going to have like all that useful information for free back, like who is tagged in that photograph. It's like, so there's like always like tricks, no? Like
okay.
Yeah. And also it's like, but also in the other hand, you know, I'm, you know, of course I think about all these topics a lot, no? And first of all, this searching for information, for me, it has been useful. I mean, I've learned a lot of things, no? It's like I've been like looking for a lot of info. So there's like something useful also, no? It's like, I don't know if it's your case, but it's like the access, you know, I'm like old enough to remember times before there was like some sort of search engine. And it was very, you know, there was like just a directory and it was like very difficult to find information, no? I don't know. And now, well, I don't know. Also, useful thing.
Of course, I think. I mean, all the DIY, how to repair things or cook things on YouTube tutorials and so on, saved me a lot of money for sure.
Yeah.
And it's also entertainment. Of course, it's for me then again good to have a ad blocker or to use tools on the phone where these ads are just blocked, but because then I see when other people use the official player how much advertisement you get also during the watching time and so on. But it's also there is this two sides in a way. Like on the one, I see people who try to completely go for the alternatives, try open source, try alternative operating systems to have a completely Google-free phone. And you also need to be tech-savvy, I would say, to install your own operating systems. Some of them go quite well that you have on a SD card and you just put it in and then you boot your phone and then you can choose, do you want to boot in Android? Do you want to boot in an alternative operating system? Mm. So, but this is not very common. I saw it extremely common in China and in South Korea that these different operating systems are way more widespread in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's always interesting to talk with people about alternative tools, alternative workflows, using maybe a cloud at home, on like an own hosted NAS or an own hosted Nextcloud or something, not use the Google Cloud. And then again, there are people, I think you also are a part of it, that try to trick a little bit the bigger platforms, like, and find within the framework that, for example, Google provides, then ways to use things or to obfuscate by having a lot of random inputs that is then maybe not making sense in the big picture of profiling and so on. Do you have some other artists or hackers or people that you also find very inspiring in that way?
Yeah, it's like first, it's like this. Definitely, there's like two approaches as I see. There's like the approach of the purists, like let's install like Linux, but not even that has like blobs with drivers. You know, you can be like very radical, it's like extreme in a good way. I don't mean it bad, you know, but that is like very few people can implement that, you know, that with my art, that is like, or with my work, I always play with the brands that everybody recognizes to in some way cut their attention to someone that is not interested. So I always wanted to play in that layer. No, I, for example, if you are able to see the project that is here exhibited, I spend some time designing something that it looked like a product.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw the boxes also.
Yeah,
and they looked like a little bit in a store where you can go and get one, and you're just looking for the checkout to pay for it. And it triggers this thought also, or this thought experiment that if this would actually be a off-the-shelf product that I can just take and plug in at home and use it, it would actually be quite cool. Do you think that you can commercialize something like this also, or would Google immediately have like a busload of lawyers in front of your...
I don't know.
Or maybe we don't want to know.
No, I've been asked a lot about that. It's like, do you want to have a product? And I received like in Instagram, like from people, yeah, we would like to... In
some take way, my like,
money. Yeah, and it's... And for me... Well, first of all, I am an artist. I'm not I'm an engineer, but that is like, but I'm not a brand. I'm not going to support that project. Like for, you know, it's like, first of, I feel that is like too big for me. And also I feel that it's very difficult to solve problems of the capitalism with capitalist strategies, no? It's like, I think it's much more like to give it for free and to release it like, if you want to fix it, it's like, but first of all, it's like, if I ever said it would be like an artwork, it would be like, you know, this is like an artwork, you know, but yeah, that I haven't said it. It's like, but I don't think that. But yeah, it's like I play, but I'm not interested in commercializing. I play. Okay. And of course, there's like a lot of copyrights. I use the logos of all these brands. You know, it's like, I don't think that you can, you know, like, and I could sell it. It's like, so from the beginning, I am in that, you know, in that point, I'm able, you know, I'm an artist. I'm able to play with all these brands. You know, I'm like in that position that I feel super free and I'm super happy about it. I can do a project that it works. I send my code. But of course, there's like, I'm sure there will be like a lot of security holds, you know, in the system.
Yeah,
you know, and it has to be so,
of course.
But in the idea, it speculates with the, you know, with the dream or the vision of having in a, it has like two layers. One would be like the individual to try to protect your privacy and how, you know, and blocking like, you know, this surveillance capitalism, like a weapon to defend yourself in an individual level, but also as a global level, imagine that everybody would use like this sort of technologies, like surveillance capitalism, as we know, like the advertisement, maybe it would break down or it would collapse, no? So I also play with that dream, everything very nicely packed, no? And also when you're talking why I'm using like the aesthetic of a product, is like, I hope, you know, that the visitor also thinks what they are like buying, no? If they are like also, you know, if they Fango presents like something that wants to subvert the system, maybe the other products, they just want to preserve the system. So that is like the why I bring like these aesthetics to this project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We are now working on a presentation of the FangoCam also during the NetArt Biennale, the exhibition and archive from Muarte. And it's an online virtual pavilion, so we will have the link to the documentation and maybe some videos or so on. We are also in the process of figuring this out, how it is, how we present it. But I wanted to ask you also, like, do you have an idea, like, for a physical installation, like it is now presented, the Fango here at the Starts exhibition? Do you have an idea or a concept how to present the Fango Cam? Or are you also still thinking about it?
Yeah, I'm just like, first of all, it's like I'm super thankful for Murat because he has allowed me to start like this idea. And maybe we can talk more about this project because because I think people, in the same way that with Fango, they don't realize that all their interactions are being registered and are being, you know, used to make a better mathematical model of our identity. I think that people don't realize that all their photographs are used to extract information, value, and so on. No, so it's like an ongoing project, but this is like the first step. In the virtual pavilion, it could be shown what is like the work in progress that we have. And right now, for the listener to know, we have like a web app that is like functional and you can take like photographs and in your phone appear like normal photographs, but in the cloud, in this case in Google Photos, is like sliced in little pieces and messed up, so it's not recognizable by machine learning system. I have like ideas, maybe we could make, you know, in my, you know, talking about, because I didn't have like much time to think about how it would be presented in the physical space. It would be probably like a photo booth and then showing how Google sees it and how do you perceive it. And it's like also playing with this, with this, you know, with this idea of human and machine. You were mentioning before artists or artworks that has like impressed me or I liked. It would be Ad Nauseam, like a plugin that it, for me, that was like the first inspiration. It does something very similar to Fango, but I think, and what encouraged me to keep working on it is because Ad Nauseam, for the listener that doesn't know, it's a plugin that is in the web browser. And while you are surfing, it's like giving clicks to all the advertisements that you see, you know, that are like present in the webpage. So they are like also obfuscating. But for me, like the limit, or why I think it was interesting to keep working on that concept, is because it's a work, I think, from 2000 something, I don't remember, maybe 2010. People involved in that project, I think, is Frim Branton and Helen, I don't remember the surname, that they have a book that is called Obfuscation, that was also very inspiring for this project. And the thing is that it's just used for desktops. So it's designed in 2000 when most of this data capturing happened in the browser. But now we live in a new age. We are like, we use more of our interaction with the network with the smartphone. So that's why it's like updated. Also, I have to think also of my colleague Cesar Escudero that has like some projects about data polluters that are like with physical objects. More in a mechanical way, I would say that is different. That is, for me also very inspiring and something that also lit me up is like these Chinese click farms. It's like I didn't know about that, but it's like for the listener that doesn't know, it's like when they launch an application and maybe you want to have like very well positioned, you can buy likes in the Google Store. And how they do that is like they have like hundreds of mobile phones automated in some case. In some other case, they are like being used, you know, interact by humans, like, and that they are like 24/7 or like they have a full-time job clicking likes. For me, that was also very inspiring. I thought that Fango, it was like a little click farm that it can be distributed. And I think as artwork is very, you know, there's like a long road to, because we can have like this distributed click farm. I think, you know, I imagine the future of Fango as something distributed that they're like connected, and maybe you are interested in pushing some agendas or some, and with your likes, you can like, I don't know, you know, I think that there's like a lot, you know, that we can play around, and that is also something that I plan to do for the future.
Yeah, thank you very much, Amandine, for your time here during the Ars Electronica Festival, and really looking forward. We have still 2-3 days of the festival, so thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. To you.
That was another episode of Netzrauschen, a broadcast by Mur.at. All links you can find in the program information on helsinki.at. You can listen to past episodes of our program on netzrauschen.mur.at and in the cultural broadcast archive at cba.media. Andreas Zingerle says goodbye, and we'll hear each other next time.